Okay, let's get right back to it. Glad you're along tonight. Hope you enjoyed the first hour. We're going to do another one right now. This will be in the archives for you. It's an extraordinary story. Our guests are Harry Cooper, who is on with us once a month for 2 hours, and we look at World War II history as it really was, and the great Clark McClelland, truly an heroic man here in utter grief, trying to do his best, physical grief. And certainly he's paid the price emotionally for being honest. He served this country for decades with the space program, and we have heard a lot. All right, now, what I'd like you to do is look to the left on my homepage under guests. It says Tuesday. You'll see you can't miss it. Look for Kecksburg. All right? It's right below Diglaca. Kecksburg. Bring those pictures up. Now, Kecksburg is a very famous UFO event in American history. Happened in Pennsylvania, and it happened, whatever it was. It's not a joke. It's not a light in the sky. It came down. It left a furrow. It knocked over small trees and came to a halt. Now, we're going to stop right there and remind you, for those of you who don't know, this object was tracked by American military radar from Canada across the border, and it meandered its way down to Pennsylvania, where it either crashed or came in for a semi-controlled landing. No one knows for sure. There's a picture at the top of the page that is absolutely stunning. The years of the trucks, there are two trucks. There's appears to be either a platform or a lowboy, I'm not sure, but this round object, which looks very much like an acorn at this point, is sitting between the trucks, which appear to have pulled it out of a thicket of trees and loaded it onto this this lowboy trailer, and they're going to haul it out of there. Clark has seen the picture. He says it's real. It's gold, a kind of a dark, burnished bronze gold color, and looks like an acorn bullet. All right, Clark, tell us what you were doing when you heard about this and how you were ordered to go with, and who did you go with, up to Kecksburg immediately to inspect this craft. What were you doing?
I was at Kennedy Space Center, Cape Canaveral, and I was approached to follow what was happening with this being tracked over the Pacific and over Canada and up above Pennsylvania. It came down the border of Pennsylvania and Ohio.
Uh-huh.
It turned east over Pittsburgh and went to Kecksburg, about 35 miles from my hometown, Pittsburgh.
These are recorded on radar, folks. They have tapes. This is not a joke. It's real. All right? So it came down. It didn't come down with a boom and break into a thousand pieces. It skidded through a bunch of small trees and left a furrow behind it. So go ahead.
Can I explain it, please?
Yeah, go ahead.
It was a controlled landing.
Thank you.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
And it came down and it did skid in. And then when I went to see it, I flew up there with a twin engine jet. I was up there with one of the major technical managers or directors at the Space Center. I will never disclose his name. And he and I were picked up when we landed near Kecksburg by I think an army car of some sort, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of years ago. So it's hard for me to remember sometimes. We were taken to Kecksburg, and then there we were offloaded, and then we were taken to another area that was not far from where it came down. We didn't know that yet. So then there were armed army people watching over all of us, including me.
Really?
So
they had a soldier with a rifle standing next to you, or near
that's
you.
That's right. That's right. Hmm. And he was there. And I said, I want to look at this craft. I'm from NASA. He didn't say anything, of course. And then he said, go ahead and do that. I went over and looked at it. I estimated its height to be about 9 feet by about 12 feet long. And it had that odd-looking bulge on it that looked like an acorn. I knocked on the side of it, and he got alarmed over that. I said, I want to see if there's anybody in it. I knocked on it again. I got no response. And then I observed it for a while. Then I heard trucks coming through the brush. Those were the low boys, or whatever you want to call them. They were coming up to pick it up, and so I had to leave. And then I looked back, and I did see them getting ready to pick it up from the skid marks that it's caused in the trees and the underbrush.
Was there any noise coming from it, Clark, when you walked up to it? Vibration?
No,
nothing?
No, nothing, period. It was flat dead.
Where is this item now? Where is it located?
Oh, we don't know. It's
what?
Wright Patterson, probably. He was asking where it is, the Kexler guy.
It's about 4 or 5 stories underground at Wright Pat.
Oh, okay, Wright Pat, gotcha.
And then I tried to see. I took a little knife out. I wanted to scrape a little part of the metal. And then the Army person with the gun, he took it off his shoulder and got ready to kind of point it at me. I said, wait a minute, I have to do these things for NASA. So I stepped back. I didn't scratch it. I didn't get any metal from it. And then after that, the trucks were coming in.
So you didn't, how many minutes did you have with it? 5? 10?
Somewhere about 15 or more.
Okay.
Because I walked all around it as I could because it was buried into the ground.
How much of it? Half?
No, about a third maybe.
Was there any smell?
There was no smell at all. None whatsoever. I even went back where I thought it may have had its ignition point.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of sniffed back there, but I couldn't smell anything back there either.
Mm-hmm.
There was some warmth to it, even though it was hours before I got up there.
Yeah.
It still felt a lukewarm to me. I did touch it, of course.
Yeah, you're up there in daytime. I want to make that clear, right?
That's right. And then my partner, he was also studying it and taking down notes and recording things. And then after that, we were all pretty well asked to leave because the trucks were coming in to pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to leave the area. But I did see afterwards a low boy with it sitting on its deck.
You've seen that picture, and that was it.
That's the picture. That was it. That's exactly what it looked like.
The color was it was actually a beautiful color. I don't know what it looked like to you in the shade of the trees, but in the sunlight in that picture, it's stunning.
Well, it appeared to me to be kind of bronzish, or kind of in that color area.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was taken off by the truck. The truck left there with a guard, of course. And it went to another base in Ohio where it was stayed. It stopped for a while. And then after that, it went on from there to Wright Pat. And then it was taken underground there. And Dr. Debus's friend, his doctor, my mind's slipping.
It's all right. Take your time. No hurry.
Doctor, mm-hmm. Doctor,
Did you, Clark, did you report to Dr. Debus about this? Who did you report to? You remember?
I gave him a brief description of what we did, but he relied on the other man's report.
Okay. Go ahead.
Can I talk?
Yes, go ahead.
He had a written report on it, the other man. I tried to get a copy of it, but they wouldn't allow me to have one. Now, Hans Kammler, he was at Wright Pat at the time, along with the other person. I'm losing my head here.
All right, you're doing fine. Did you see any writing on the outside of this craft?
I saw something that looked like scribble to me. That's what I called it. But I couldn't read what it was or said. But Dr. Kammler, he and Siegfried Kennemar received it at KS at Wright Pat, and there they back engineered it, and actually they had back engineered the Roswell craft also, and they back engineered this craft from Kecksburg.
How did you find this out, Clark? Just scuttlebutt, or did someone brief you that they had back engineered it over time?
I had friends all over the place, and they trusted me.
Uh-huh.
And they would call me and tell me things, and then I had to be careful. And then all of a sudden, I was not careful enough, and the government caught on, and they finally fired me. After 34 years, I have no retirement. You're in one of the most, if not the most, evil government on the planet Earth here.
I think we're aware of that, my friend. We've killed, just since the so-called Iraq War, we've killed over 6 million people. This country, this government, land of the home, the brave, or whatever the hell it is.
Right.
It doesn't matter anymore because it isn't. We've lost our values, we've lost our morals, we've lost so much.
I think you know why, you know the race that caused that.
It's a real issue for debate. It's a real sad story, and it's one of the reasons why you're suffering so much right now. They want you to.
They want me dead.
All right. Well, you're not dead, and you've got a hell of a big audience right now listening. Anything else about the Kecksburg event? I'm not going to ask you again. I would never to tell me who you went up there with. But obviously, you went up there with someone of rank. Someone who had extraordinary abilities that probably surpassed you in some ways, or they wouldn't have sent him up there.
Well, that may be so, but to be honest with you, Frank, what I came out of there with was far more in detail than what he came with. Although I didn't read his report, I wanted to read it. So we were taken back to the airport and flown back to the KSC, Cape Canaveral area. And I was very tired when I got back. I had to try to explain it to my wife at the time. I still had a wife. And that was the end of that.
Well, were you debriefed at KSC first before you were allowed to go home?
Of course I was. I was debriefed, but I wasn't debriefed by the people I wanted to be debriefed by.
That's an interesting statement.
Well, I didn't trust a lot of the people I worked with down there. I didn't because I'll tell you the truth what it was. It was jealousy of what I did and all I was involved in. A lot of the engineers way up at the top of the line, they were all jealous of me. Anytime they could, they'd try to hurt me. That's the Americans for you.
Well, it's. I think it probably extends to other cultures as well. It's called greed.
Yeah, it's greed.
And ego.
Greed owns the planet Earth.
Yeah.
But Ernst Stuhlinger and the other German scientists I work with were actually very mannerly and polite with me. And I'm very happy I met all these people and have been able to put it in the book form like I have, even though nobody will allow it to be published.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried an achievement in China. I had one publishing company interested. I sent them three chapters. They read them. They said, my God, you know, this is amazing. Yes, we'll be back in touch with you. About 7 to 8 days or a week or so later, I got another email. We have no further interest. Sorry. So that's what this nation did. They shut down my effort to publish my book.
Mm-hmm.
We're in a very evil country. Very evil.
No question.
Yeah. Man.
All right. Is there anything else about the Kecksburg trip that you remember? It's been a long time, and I understand that. And you're under a lot of stress right now and great pain, but you're doing really a superb job. When you went up to this thing, how did it make you emotionally feel to see something so strange like this?
Well, I've been involved with UFO studies since 1947, so actually it didn't cause me any problem.
Uh-huh.
None at all, because my mind is always open to whatever I'm going to look at or investigate.
Got it.
And I didn't have any fear of what I was looking at. I was just hoping maybe if I knocked on it, I could hear maybe somebody knock back, but that didn't happen. And it was quite an object to see, I'll tell you that. They did not allow us to have cameras. And I had a little tape recorder. And when I got back to the Space Center, I put it in my locker underneath one of the launch pads. And they launched the rocket from it. And the water that they used to cool down the pad,
mm-hmm,
seeped into the area where my recorder was and destroyed it.
Hmm.
My usual luck.
Hmm. All right, this picture, the photograph at the top of the Kecksburg object page, on the left is an army. Oh, it looks like a deuce and a half. It's got a white star. It's in army drab, beige. And then the other truck on the right, it looks like a fire truck. There's an emergency light bar on top, above the cab, the roof of it. It's got an extended bar with a rear view mirror you can see on the left. And then
sure
it has...
That's not the tractor? You're sure that's not the tractor that's pulling the flat, the low boy?
Could be. Don't know.
There were fire companies there in case there was a fire that would break out.
I had people tell me, the locals who were there, they got as close as they could, and the fire department was really first to arrive long before the army got there.
Yeah.
So I don't have an answer, but that's a possible guess, yeah.
That's what they did. The good people in Kecksburg.
Harry, do you have a question for Clark?
No, I'm just listening and learning.
All right. This thing was so unusual, and it came in under guided control.
At this point
in your life, what do you think? It doesn't appear to have any portholes. It was smooth, and it did have some scribbles on it, you say. Does it strike you as to have been a remotely controlled object, or do you think there may have been some controllers in it?
It was launched by Russia into the heavens orbit.
So it was their version of the Bell years after the war.
That's right. They had engineers that von Braun had that wanted to come to America, but they didn't. They said, we'll go to Russia. And when they went there, They had a real good time helping the Russians develop the Glock. And they did a good job, actually.
That's interesting.
There's one of the famous scientists from Germany. I can't remember his name. But Von Braun tried to get him to come to the USA.
Yeah.
He refused. He went to Russia.
I can't imagine anyone going to the Soviet Union, frankly.
He and a lot of other German scientists and engineers did so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Correct.
Oh, yeah.
So okay.
Surprisingly, a whole lot of them went to Argentina as well.
Yeah right.
Did I tell you that I talked to someone who had a friend who died about a year ago in his 90s? He was a P-51 pilot during the war. And in Germany, when the war ended, his squadron was kept there, not shipped back home stateside. They were retrained on the Douglas aircraft DC-4s. They had some long-distance versions made, lots of them. And he said there must have been a couple dozen, I think, from my story that I got. And they were packed with things and people, and their job was to fly them to the Canary Islands and then from there on down to Argentina. We flew thousands of Germans out of Germany. Call them Nazis if you want for public relations consumption. But we took the cream of the crop, those who were still there and able to get out, and we flew them in our planes, long distance, long range DC-4s.
That's right.
I had tried to get this guy on the program, but unfortunately he passed.
That happened, and then this nation is not an angel.
Oh my gosh, no. Well, I think you're talking to the one audience in the world, Clark, that not only knows you, but they know what you say to be.
Yeah, I would like, please, if you would mention one more time my...
We got a half hour to go. We will. We'll go and do that. Yeah. We'll do that.
I need some help, ladies and gentlemen. I need it really badly.
All right.
Help me, please.
Well, if there is, like I say, if there's an MD down there who would like to help Clark in some way... Well, that would be great, and you can contact me through the website, just rentswebmaster@gmail.com, or contact rents@earthlink.net, and I'll get it, and I'll make sure that Clark gets it. Okay, be right back with more in just a minute.
Thank you.
Okay, we're back with Clark and Harry. I keep looking at this picture with my magnifying glass. The 2.5-ton truck on the left is a four-wheel drive truck. There appears to be a large rope hanging from the front of it, possibly used to help pull this thing out. It's sitting on a lowboy trailer, and I think you're dead on, Harry, that the yellow vehicle on the right with the emergency light flashing bar on top. And if you'll notice, that air intake is designed, it looks like, to go underwater if it needs to.
That's the exhaust pipe.
Up on top like that?
Yeah. They did. When I was in the Air Force, they used trucks exactly like that to haul the thermonuclear weapons out to the aircraft for our loading.
So they blew the exhaust right up off the side, like, interesting. Okay.
Oh, it comes around from behind the cab and then mm-hmm. up. You see that on semis even today.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's
exactly
the kind of truck they used when I was in the Air Force when we were loading thermonuclears on board bombers.
The square box throws me, but I don't. That's just what it was. Those are rearview mirrors sticking out then further?
Right.
Okay. That truck is hooked up to that low boy trailer. You're right. That was the tractor that pulled it.
that would make sense the way it looks, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Very good. Okay, Clark, what happened after this? You know, you were in a position. Did people come up to you and say, "What was it, Lark Clark? What happened up there?" Or did silence reign? What happened back at KSC?
Just about as much as you said, silence reigned, because most of the people that I worked with had pretty good knowledge of what I was doing, mm-hmm. as far as secrecy with the Office of Naval Intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't want to get involved with what happened with me and O and I. So they kind of stayed loose with me. Maybe one or two, a man that died now, he was talking with me, and I said, "Walt, I can't say much more." He said, "I understand, Clark." So that was about all there was about
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
Did see the director that went with me many times after that, but mm-hmm. not hardly a word was spoken about our trip there.
Right. Is that man still around? I guess he is, right? That's why you said you didn't want to identify him?
No, he's dead. I will not identify him anyway.
Okay. All right.
I know who exactly it was.
All right. Well, you flew up with him. Okay. Now, this craft, with all of your knowledge of orbiting satellites, space shuttles, other kinds of strange flying craft, what do you think this was? A satellite object of some kind? What do you have a guess?
I think it was something that the Russians were working on to create and advance in technology.
Uh-huh.
But the Germans had reached at a point, and they were trying to reach the point where it would be a flying object. And it was actually one that was it was called the Wunderwaffe weapon. Of course, it had high frequency current with counter rotating magnetic fields. And I said, too, it buzzed like a giant beehive
mm-hmm.
and glowed a bluish hue. And I did find something else here. I can't find it now. Anyway, that was the way it was, and we have it, and we developed it, and actually it was flown. The craft was flown by the United States, and it may still be flying by the United States, but some of its technology went into our triangular spaceships.
TR-3B.
TR-3s, yes.
Yeah. Here's one of the stories about Kecksburg. An unidentified flying object falls near Kecksburg. An unidentified flying object, possibly the same one reported seen streaking across 7 northeastern states and Canada late Thursday afternoon, apparently fell to the earth in a secluded wood area near Kecksburg in Westmoreland County. The area where the object landed was immediately sealed off on the order of the U.S. Army and state police officials, reportedly in anticipation of a close inspection of whatever may have fallen. A spokesman for a team of radar experts from the Army's, can't read it, something squadron in Pittsburgh said, "We don't know what we have yet." Tribune Review staff writer Robert Galley reported from the, it's distorted, this old newsprint, reported from the scene that no one is being allowed near the object. State police are there. And he said, ordered the area roped off to all to await the expected arrival of both U.S. Army engineers and possibly civilian scientists, of which we have on the phone with us right now, Clark McClelland, who did come and did look at it. Did you see anybody else there doing any examining when you were there?
Not when he and I
Mm-hmm.
Not when he and I were in there together. They kept us apart because they didn't want us to talk to each other.
Mm.
So if there were others, I don't recall seeing them.
And, that's pretty much standard operating procedure. Keep everybody apart so they don't come together on sharing information.
That's right.
I have a question here. Has anybody tried to track down any of the other people that were there? I don't mean the high-level people like Clark. I mean the grunts who were driving the trucks or walking a perimeter with a weapon.
Well, there's a fellow named Stan Gordon who has spent most of his adult life investigating this incident. He's got a book out on it. I used to have him on the program. The local townspeople were there before anybody was there. And I did talk to a boy at the time who was, I think, 10 or 12. He's an adult now. Years ago, on this program, he was the first person there. A little kid.
Yeah, Stan Gordon's my friend.
Oh, good. Yeah, Stan did a marvelous job. When you look at these pictures on the Kecksburg page, there's a very fascinating one down further, black and white, of a fighter plane apparently chasing a disc with a round dome top. And this is, the headline says, or the caption says, May 11th, 2 days after Germany's, quote, total surrender. And as a fighter plane, looks like a Mustang, P-51, chasing one of those discs with the three round objects underneath. It says gigantic German
foo fighter.
Yeah. Haunted by
foo fighters.
Yeah, right. Haunted by P-51. I had the P-51 right. So this photograph taken by another plane in pursuit, extraordinary. One wonders if they shot at it. One would hope not. And then there's another one that's an illustration, an artist's concept of what this object looked like. It was very bright in the forest. And at the bottom, we have a hand drawing of a fence with barbed wire on it, looks like, lights, and there is a bell-shaped object behind it. I'll read the caption. It says, that's the pain.
Some of my pain is coming back.
All right. Hold on.
Okay.
If you have to, we can wait.
No, it's all right.
All right. Let me read this here. A witness named Myron claimed to have seen and drew this image of a bell-shaped object with hieroglyphics along its bottom rim, stored at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Myron worked as a truck driver for a cement factory belonging to his family in Dayton, Ohio. 2 days after the incident occurs at Kecksburg, his firm received a large order for specially glazed bricks from the Wright-Patterson airfield. A representative of the base had a look at the bricks in stock at the factory and finally ordered 6,500 double-glazed processed bricks, he said were for building a double-walled shield around a recovered radioactive object. Myron later glanced inside the hangar to view what was inside, and he saw what he drew. The object was silhouetted by floodlights behind large silk-like parachute screens. Myron described the, quote, shadowy outlines of a large bell-shaped object, perhaps 9 feet wide and 12 feet high. Through a small opening in the tent, he could see that it was metallic, like some kind of whitish bronze. So there you go, Clark.
It's also interesting that Myron said it was 9 feet by 12 feet, which is exactly the way Clark described it when he saw it in Kecksburg, 9 by 12.
That's right, 9 by 12. That's what it was. It had a scribble on it, and I tried to write down what the scribble looked like.
Uh-huh. But could it have been some kind of Russian?
No, I don't think it was. But then it could be. I have no idea. I couldn't say. I'm not very good on languages and different writing.
Right.
Anyway.
That's a very special case that this Myron, his company, involved, and you can see how he's tried to draw, if you look at the picture carefully, a parachute-like covering behind it, hanging down from above, and then you can see the spotlights illuminating it. This was a big deal, whatever it was.
Yes, it was. It's a very big deal, the Keksberg recovery.
And it was a Soviet-designed, apparently, or a Soviet-built, with help from somebody, including the Germans.
The Germans and the Soviets built it in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was launched, and the launch vehicle that it was launched by had a malfunction, and they released the Glock from it so it would not be harmed or go down with the other parts. And then it kept running, it kept in orbit until it got over the Canada, then down to Pennsylvania, then into Keksberg.
Hmm.
That's what happened.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, I have so much I could tell people, but the evil in this country will not allow it.
Well, hopefully you'll be able to do some of that, Clark. If you take it with you, and then you don't have much to lose. They've taken about everything you have. Go to Clark's website, click on his name, get yourself a piece of the gold foil from the Apollo 15 mission in a beautiful picture arrangement with James Irwin saluting. And it's the yellow foil that was around the legs, the lander legs of the LEM.
And on the back of it, I describe exactly where it went and by whom. And there's a photo of me sitting in the space shuttle Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
The Columbia was destroyed by sabotage. There was a Israeli pilot flying in it, and he had secret photography instruments and such with them that had radioactivity in them. And then the Columbia blew up and killed seven crew members. Well, six crew members and the Israeli pilot.
Now, that was interesting that there was an Israeli pilot at the controls of that, isn't it?
They were at the controls. He had the controls of the photography equipment. He wasn't controlling the shuttle.
Oh.
No way. No way. Uh-uh.
So who blew it up? How did it blow up? Do we know? Do we have a guess?
Well, there's another part of that story that I know. I was observing it above the incoming craft, and I could see that from what looked like a stationary on-orbit platform way up about 22,000 miles, there was a flash there of something that was launched from it.
Ah.
Came down in behind the shuttle, and it hit it. But then the shuttle had damage of it anyway with the heat tiles and such that were missing.
Yeah.
So whatever hit it, of course, caused more damage, and it finally blew up over California and then Texas and Louisiana.
Is the prevailing knowledge that the heat tile damage would have doomed it anyhow without that extra impact from whatever was released?
Yeah, there is. There's a lot of that because it was bad damage from the heat tiles.
Yeah. Well, again,
I found one mission that was being prepared where I was inspecting the heat tiles, and I found six of them that were very loosely put on. But you see, we had people at the Space Center that were enemies. We had in the 1960s KGB agents working at Kennedy Space Center, KGB from Russia.
Understand.
They killed two of my O&I friends, and I killed two of them.
That I didn't know.
That you know now. That's right. I found three efforts to destroy the Titan II with the Gemini capsule. Two of them I found and caused it to not happen. And the third one was an atlas that was sent to the moon, and I found photography boxes hidden behind the beams at the level where the satellite was.
Huh.
And I found them only after the vehicle was launched. And the vehicle went towards the moon. It went far out, and then it exploded and was destroyed. That was sabotage also. My history there is a novel in itself.
I would say that's extraordinary. You were aware that there were ongoing efforts to do grievous, grave, fatal damage to this space program by our enemies.
That's right. I was trained in O&I. I was a damn good O&I agent. I was counterintelligence, meaning I had to find any efforts to explode our rockets that I could. I found two of them and saved both the launches. But I got poisoned with the UDMH fuel, and my lungs were burning for several hours after that. But I don't think they were damaged. I'm 80 years old now.
O&I, for you listening, is Office of Naval Intelligence. It's like
That's
the
right.
CIA for the Navy, but probably better.
It was. I tried to get my records of O&I from Patrick Air Force Base, and they told me there was never an O&I unit there. That's bull crap. That's a big lie.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big lie.
Mm-hmm. Harry, we got about 3 minutes left here.
Yes, sir.
Step in here with anything you'd like to comment on or elaborate
upon. I'm learning as we go along because Clark is the expert in this field, not me. I'm the expert in Hitler's escape and on the U-boats, but on this, on the Bell, Igor Vitovsky is the world expert on the Bell, but the textbook thing and all the rest, Clark is the knowledgeable guy there. I can just fill in a little bit like the function of that one truck you saw. Like I say, that's the kind
of... That was very helpful. Thank you.
That's what they use, and even out on the highway, too, with the flashing lights on top, that doesn't necessarily mean a fire truck, just warning people to stay away so they don't get wrecked.
I couldn't see behind it, but I saw with my magnifying glass better, and you're 100% right. It was hooked up to that lowboy.
Yeah, it's just a regular semi, a military tractor.
Clark,
trailer type.
What do you want to do besides get some relief for the pain next? How much of your story are you going to disclose, do you think?
I've got 30 chapters that are going up there now, and it's the last 29 and 30 chapters is short. They're only 4 or 5 pages long, but they're also very amazing. And I'm looking now for what chapter I'm going to do next. I had about 44 or 45 of them when I was starting this. I have to look what they are now, find out which ones I might have missed. But I have all the very important ones up there pretty well already. So if only people would read it, open my website at stargate-chronicles.com, and please buy some of my chapters. And if you would, buy a moon gold photo. Soon I'm going to have the Apollo 11 emblem, the cloth patch that I designed with Michael Collins, the crew member. I designed that Apollo 11 flight patch to the moon. I'm going to sell that and with a description on the back of it. So the Apollo 11 patch will be a cloth patch with the description on the back, and I will autograph it back there. That'll be an amazing piece of history to also keep. I have also a flag I'm putting up soon from the Apollo 14 mission Alan Shepard gave me. It flew on the Apollo 14 mission, landed on the moon with him, and he brought it back and gave this. It's a small U.S. flag.
Yeah.
I'm going to put that up for sale on the past, on my website too. I'm just trying to earn a living and survive. That's all.
Yeah.
And well, I have horrible pain.
The bottom line is this alleged government is capable of anything, and hopefully, maybe there'll be someone in the medical field out there that will contact me.
Okay.
Contact Rents at earthlink.net. It's real simple.
And, Thank you, Harry, for being on. You didn't get the chance to say much, but maybe you learned.
That's okay. I'm listening and I'm learning. And, you know, one of these days we'll have to get together for lunch again.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. That German restaurant we went to was a wonderful place. I seldom have the time to go out and eat like that. I'm too poor.
That was a great restaurant. It was we had Jägerschnitzel.
Yeah, right. It was wonderful.
Is that ham and eggs, Harry? What is that?
No, that's a pork cutlet, and which is your schnitzel, and breaded pork cutlet, but Jaeger, which means hunter. It has the hunter sauce, a dark gravy with chopped up little scallions and mushrooms in it, and oh, man, is it good.
Good job.
Yeah, it is.
Glad
really
you guys
good.
Had fun. That's nice. All right, Clark, I want you to go rest now. You've really done well. You're exhausted, I can tell, but you did great.
My pain is coming back.
I understand.
Also.
All right. Well, I'll be in touch with you.
Okay. You be careful now.
Thanks, Clark.
And thank you, ladies and gentlemen. If you can help me in any way, a donation or whatever else, I would appreciate that.
Indeed.
Thank you, and good night to everybody.
Good night, Clark.
Good night.
Well, Harry.
Yes, sir.
He did great. I
just listened.
Yeah, he expended all the energy he had to try to remember and do the best to bring it to life, and he did. And thank you for being here as always, and all the magnificent work you do. And we'll talk to you soon.
All right. We take care, and we'll talk at you next time.
Okay. Good night.
Righto. Bye-bye.
Harry Cooper, sharkhunters.com. Okay, back at you with more in a few minutes.